For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Natural Hat Trick with Luke Lipinski, Craig Morgan, and Jamie Eisner.
Welcome into episode something of the Natural Hat Trick podcast alongside Craig Morgan.
Natty Hattie is back.
Kind of. Alongside robot Craig Morgan.
Yeah.
And Jamie Eisner.
Yay for buffering.
Oh, great. Jamie comes through loud and clear. I'm Luke Lipinski. This is an episode we have. It's an episode in the 240s. I remember that much.
I don't remember anything. Anything that happened pre-coronavirus doesn't exist anymore. It's all gone.
It feels like this hockey season, which we could still see a conclusion to here in a couple months. It feels like it ended longer ago than like the 2014 season ended.
I can't remember anything that I did in the season. I think I remember flying back from Canada, but yeah, after that Winnipeg game, but that feels like a million years ago.
You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. The weirdest thing is we knew something was going on, but after the Winnipeg game, it's not like any of us thought, all right, that's the last Coyotes game for a while. I mean, I remember leaving the studio that night and being like, okay, they have a game on Thursday at home against Vancouver.
Yeah, because there was this weird, like, element just in the world of you knew what was happening. You saw what was happening, you know, over in China. You saw what was happening in Italy. You kind of started to see what was happening on the East Coast, but it kind of felt like it was still push down the road problem. Like there was still the, we know this is bad, but this is going to be bad in a few weeks. And then this stuff happened with Rudy Gobert. And then in very short order, in a 72 hour window, the entire sports world just came to a screeching halt or a pause, as some might call it. And then all hell broke loose in the real world and more importantly than the sports world. But I don't know. It's weird. It feels like I know this isn't escape from it, so I don't want to get too deep into this, but it almost feels like anything that happened beforehand, any podcast you watch or listen to, any shows you watch, they feel instantly antiquated if it happened and it was recorded before March. It really does.
Except ours. You should go back and listen to ours because we had some good stuff in like December.
Good recovery.
That's when we peaked as a show. Okay, well.
That's a scary thought. That was our peak.
Let's start with the draft while I try and bring up listener questions. So how do you gentlemen feel about the possibility of the NHL draft still happening in late June, like it always does?
Well, I'll start with, by the way, calling people's attention to a piece that Corey Pronman wrote for the FA today that really lays out the pros and cons. It's pretty good, actually. And listen, the pros are, as you can imagine, a lot of them are revenue-driven. The networks would love to have this, to have the content. The NHL would love to have this sort of content. And the other thing that it allows is all of these draft prospects, it puts them on a normal schedule for development camps and all of that. So it doesn't make things harder on those prospects. But there are clearly a lot of problems with it. As a lot of people have outlined, what are you doing with the lottery system? I really don't like the idea of just giving Detroit a major advantage in the lottery. What are you doing in terms of trades that sometimes become outlets for teams to – you know, maybe unload a mid-level contract or something like that might help them get under the cap. And certainly a lot of teams are going to be cap-strapped at this point. So there are a lot of arguments on both sides of this. Right now, general managers are overwhelmingly against, but it sounds like the league is going to push for it.
Well, I mean, general managers were against it in the NFL. I don't know if they were overwhelmingly against it, but they were against it at first and they got on board. I mean, I think that there is a certain, you know, it all seems not irrelevant, but it seems, you know, smaller in importance compared to what's going on in the rest of the world. But at the same time, if you're the NHL, you don't want to just completely disappear for 6 months, not as a business, if you can help it. And it's not like having a draft poses a safety threat. So,
no, I mean, I agree with that, but the the difference with the NFL is they weren't in the middle of a season. So
yeah,
you had a lot of issues to sort out. That there's it's not a fair comparison, I don't think.
Well, I think what you're saying right there is the most important thing. They need to make a decision with what they're going to do on things. It can't be like, oh, we might play out the playoffs in four cities, or we might want to play out the regular season if we have a chance. Like, I understand you can only plan so much right now, but before you have a draft, you need to at least know if you come back, if that means just playoff teams, if it means 24 teams, if it means every team, which is a dumb idea. Just for simply, you can't have a draft lottery where the team that has the 11th worst record wins the draft lottery, and then 3 weeks later we're back to playing hockey and they also make the playoffs. You know, you need to at least determine what hockey is going to look like when it comes back before you do a draft.
Yeah, and look, we're going to have to all accept a certain level of imperfection. Just to get through this situation, there is not a perfect solution. There's not going to be a perfect solution. And to expect one that's going to satisfy everybody and all parties is just unrealistic. You have to do the best you can to get through this. I'm actually in favor of the plan if they're able to establish in advance of what the playoff structure looks like. And to me, I think the fairest way to do it is to take, even if you decide you're going to chop the playoffs down later on and maybe only do eight teams or four teams or whatever, you establish the 16 teams that are in playoff spots based on points percentage right now, and then you choose the 15 teams that aren't are in the lottery. And I understand you don't ideally want the Red Wings to get this massive advantage, but I actually don't have a problem with that idea because I think I am more concerned about teams from the mid-level always, even before all this pandemic stuff, jumping into the top three than I'm worried about the worst team in hockey being guaranteed a top two pick. It's not ideal. Sure. I know you'd like it, but the point is the draft lottery was put in place to avoid intentional tanking for the number one pick. Detroit didn't know we were going to have a global pandemic before the season ended. So they weren't, they were tanking and they weren't playing well, but I don't feel like this is the same situation as we've seen in other leagues. The thing to me is keeping prospects on that same line, being able to establish some level of normalcy that doesn't incredibly impact the 2020-2021 season, I think is important. And if the worst case scenario of that is that the worst team in hockey gets guaranteed a top two pick, then that's the worst case scenario. It wasn't fair that the Penguins got handed Sidney Crosby either, but
easy.
The league moved on, didn't it? So I don't think that's the end of the world. If the worst thing that happens coming out of this, if they're able to, even if they're not able to play the rest of the season, if they don't have to push back the following season too much because they can cancel the All-Star game and do other things, and the worst thing that happens is Lafreniere goes to Detroit, I think we'll all be okay.
What is the logic, though, behind giving Detroit a skewed chance to get Lafreniere?
Well, it's not
giving Detroit. You don't want some of those teams jumping in, right? Like you were mentioning earlier, Jamie, you don't want some of those other teams being able to move up as far. I think there's probably a balance between the two. I don't want Detroit having a 100% guarantee of having one of the top two picks. I think that's unfair. And it's going to be a one-off. And I get that a lot of things are one-off this season, but you don't have to make it absolute like that. There still needs to be a percentage chance that they drop a little farther.
The other thing is, do we really think Detroit was tanking? I mean, I think they were just truly horrible.
They're just terrible.
So far back that, I understand you can't change the rules every year. Like, oh, this team wasn't tanking, but we think this team was. But they were so far behind everybody and getting worse. There's no way Detroit was going to accidentally go on a 15-game winning streak to close out the year and all of a sudden have the second worst record. Like, they are just historically bad.
To me, it's ideally you wouldn't want that, but I think it's no more unfair to guarantee them a top two pick than to guarantee that they have a great chance of picking fourth, which is what the other system was going to be too. So,
yeah.
I mean, and the reality is you're given a top pick to Ottawa or Detroit. So pick your poison. And to me, Ottawa as an organization is way more troublesome in the way that they have acted over the last 2 years than the way Detroit's organization has. So I get why some people are upset, but to me, I'm way more okay with Detroit getting a guaranteed top two pick than I am a team that is sitting above 500 getting a top two pick.
I do think there is value to having the draft, though, and some of it's what Jamie just said. I mean, it's not the same. It's certainly not the same as football. It's not the same as baseball either, where they have the draft in the middle of the season every year, because that's built into baseball. But you do need to be able to plan as if next season's going to happen on a normal schedule, even if it doesn't. Because what happens if things do get better and the 2020-2021 season is able to go and start like normal, and then you're not ready for it because you push the draft back to September or something? So I just don't – it feels like to me the cons of against having the draft in June are all fixable for the most part. And so that's I just think you need to find a way to do it.
I'm really curious how teams are going to manage. You know, I know there are not a lot of major trades that are made at the draft, but there are some trades that are made at the draft, like I said, that would help teams. You know, you unload a player for a pick. That kind of stuff isn't going to happen now, and you're not going to have that sort of those sorts of assets to deal when you're trying to get under the cap. I'm curious how they're going to manage that as well.
Especially not knowing what the cap is. What's the cap going to
be?
I don't think anybody knows. And I saw somebody, it was an agent, and of course it was, but like with this exceptional cap status or something where Curdle, you designate one player that doesn't count or whatever BS that was. But I don't know. It's interesting because there's so much unknown, and there's so much, it's such an unprecedented territory, but you know, are you basically just having a draft to have a draft and not going to trade picks or player? Or I guess you could trade picks for picks, but not going to trade players. Like I don't know if there's a great solution to it. I just think for these leagues, I think mitigating having two back-to-back sketchy, for lack of a better phrase, seasons, I think has to be the goal. How can you play the 2020-21 season as smoothly as possible? It's not going to be easy because I don't even think, I mean, even if you started that season on time next year, I'm not sure you're starting that season on time with fans in stadiums. You're not starting that team with any of the California teams, most likely. So, I mean, there are still a lot of logistical hurdles that you have to overcome there, but I think maintaining some sense of potential normalcy will be important, so you're not then trying to scramble 6 months from now and fit all of this in and the start of the season and just trying to figure it all out.
Well, and that is...
I don't see any way that starts on time. I really don't. I don't see any scenario under which the next season starts on time unless this one is canceled. But that condensed schedule they're talking about, I know that seems that's getting brushed over a lot, and that's a crazy schedule they're proposing, especially with the Olympics looming after it and a lot of players wanting to play, and that's going to be just an absolutely grueling schedule for these players. And I'm really curious how that's going to play out with the PA as well.
There is, and Craig sort of brought this up, and I mean, it's been brought up before, but you do have to look at the fact that, you know, let's say Chicago trades Duncan Keith to the Oilers or something at the draft, and then all of a sudden we are playing out the rest of the season in the middle of July, and Duncan Keith's just on the Oilers now, and so all of a sudden they were able to trade for a guy for the playoff push after the trade deadline.
There's no way if they would do that, it would be effective before next season. I mean, so, it's kind of like where they let non-playoff teams trade, you know, where you can trade for their rights, but you don't actually like get to use them.
But that's what I'm saying. So then the more realistic but still awkward situation is that Duncan Keith's playing for the Blackhawks knowing he's really on the Oilers. And so that's why I just think, like, what is the date as far as having a season next, finishing this season? It's got to be early July anyway, doesn't it?
Are you talking about the completion of the playoffs or just the season?
Just knowing that, like, okay, we're going to complete the playoffs. When do we have to start doing that by?
Oh, yeah, you got to start by July, I would think.
So yeah, you should know all that by the end of June when the draft would have been anyway.
Yeah, and you should, again, and you should have an abridged postseason. Like, they can't play any more regular season games. They don't have time. They're not going to have time. This isn't going to get better. Oh, by the way, this is all fun and games. I know, but there's no way.
Yeah. How do you bring players back from Europe? We've talked about all this before, I know, but how do you bring LA Kings players back from Europe? How do you work out their work visas and say, here's a 3-week train, play 5 games, and then, yeah, go back on your merry way? That simply can't happen.
Well, and it won't. I mean, reports out of Canada are they don't consider athletics essential, that they're not going to let you come over the border with work visas right now.
Right.
So where are you playing? You're going to sequester in certain locations, but I just, to me, are players going to want to do that? Because a lot of baseball players balked very hard at that idea that MLB proposed of, whether it was Arizona or a couple other places to go, basically sequestering for the season to go play somewhere. Now, it's a little bit different when you're talking a couple months versus an entire baseball season, but there's a lot of that goes into it too. And
yeah, and
all of this is nice up until the point a player gets sick again. Then what happens? That's the thing that I don't think enough people are talking about in all of these sports is even if the curve starts to fight, all this other stuff is great. But when they come back and inevitably a player tests positive, then what are you going to do? Are you shutting it all down again? And if you shut it all down again, the season is over, period, end of story.
Yeah, I guess my original point is just you need to know this stuff by the time you do the draft. And if the day where you have to get going with the rest of this season is July 3rd or whatever anyway, and the draft is going to be on June 26th or whatever, I think everything is so unpredictable right now, but when we're talking about a matter of days, I think they would have a good enough feel for, yeah, we can go ahead with the draft because we're not going to be able to finish out the season anyway, or we can finish it out, but it's only going to be 8 teams or whatever. I just think that's the one thing you maybe can control in this situation. But you guys are right. I mean, you can't get baseball players to commit to isolating for 4 months or whatever. And really at this point, what, I don't know, 50% of the teams in Major League Baseball would have a chance at winning the World Series because it's going to be such a weird season anyway. But you're not going to be able to bring back the Detroit Red Wings for 2 games just so the St. Louis Blues reach their required number of regular season games. That is insane. There's no way that can happen. And I know this was brought up. It was brought up to Brian Burke the other day, and he's like, well, if the players want to get paid, they'll do it. So they'll do it. No, I don't think they will. Would you come back for 2 games or fly across the globe in this situation to play 2 completely meaningless games? It's tough enough to get guys to fly across to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, I wouldn't do it for 10 or 12, even if they said, yeah, we're going to finish the regular season. I'd say, no, there's no point. If I'm on the LA Kings, are you kidding me?
No.
Sir.
Well, and the other concern that we talk about dollars are the way players are paid for the postseason. Like, this is, it's not the same way they're paid for the regular season. And I would not be surprised if there are a few players, particularly that may have been, had their communities or their families extremely adversely affected by this illness, saying, you know what? I'm not playing for a share. Because I don't know what my share is going to be because there ain't going to be any fans in the stands. And I don't know what the TV deals are going to be specifically for this. So I could see some players saying, you know what? I don't care. And look, if they're low on the totem pole, they're probably going to have to play. But are you, if, you know, for example, if Alex Ovechkin says, I don't feel comfortable playing, Capitals aren't going to cut him. So then what do you do?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's once a big name, it's one thing if a guy that is like a fringe fourth liner is like, oh, I don't want to do it. Okay, well, you're not going to hold up the whole league and the chance to award the Stanley Cup for that one guy. But the second a star like Ovechkin or McDavid or somebody's like, nah, I'm not comfortable with this. Well, then what? There's going to be such a big asterisk next to that Stanley Cup winner at that point that why would you even go through with it? Especially because it's not going to be just one guy that's against it. So, I mean, I'm still holding out hope this could happen. I know it sounds like we're all just writing the season off. I'm not writing it off. But I just think we're talking about a draft at the end of June. That's still 6-7 weeks away. But at that point, they obviously need to have their plan in place because you don't want to mess with next season. You want to avoid that as much as you possibly can. The other thing is, like, I'm all for bringing baseball back with no fans and really any of the sports if that's the only way to do it. But and if that's the way to bring back hockey, and I think it will be ultimately at first, you need to do it. Hockey to me is the sport that's going to look the strangest without fans, especially if we're talking about playoff hockey, because the crowd is such a big part of the playoff hockey presentation on TV and radio.
Well, that and look, there are a lot of revenue concerns here. Baseball, they make their money from TV deals. I mean, that's why with all this funny money you see going around, like the Miami Marlins don't lose money like everybody pretends that they do. They make tens of millions of dollars because of their TV deals and them just deciding to actively not play, you know, pay any good players. But the NHL doesn't have that luxury. There are a lot of teams in the NHL that are closer to that, like kind of hanging on or just over the hanging on line under normal circumstances, that effect of revenue with costs going back to being the same or maybe more, it's going to be an issue. And I don't know how you tackle that. I don't know how you tackle that for the Ottawas, the you know, the Arizonas that have a new owner, or some of these other, the Floridas. Like, I don't know how you tackle this issue where they're going to essentially, most of these teams are going to be losing money to play. How is the league prepared to handle that? Are individual owners saying, I don't know if I want to come back under these circumstances because I'm going to lose money just by turning on the lights? You know, how does that affect all of this? I don't have the answer to that. I don't know, but it's something that they have to consider, that it's something baseball doesn't really have. Like, trust me, they want the money. Don't get me wrong, but none of them are going to be losing money or going broke because there are no fans in the stands because of the way their specific sport is structured in terms of revenue. But that's going to be a huge difference for some of these NBA teams and the NHL teams.
I haven't really seen much of a pushback, and Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen much of a push from fans that are like, no, I don't, what's the point of playing these games if there's not going to be fans in the stands? I do feel like most people understand, you know, that probably is going to be the first way we get sports back, is you're just going to have to adjust to watching the game on TV or listening on the radio and not hearing a crowd or seeing a crowd. That's just the reality we're looking at for now. Unfortunate as it is, as much as it sucks, like Jamie said, there is no perfect solution right now. You just have to try and find any solutions.
Yeah, I haven't seen any pushback on that, but there are certainly opinions all over the map on whether it should actually happen. And there are a lot of people who are just saying, just cancel the season already. Stop with this madness. There's so many issues to be worked out. It's absurd that we're even thinking about that. And I think that's fair. And we haven't decided to dive yet into the testing issues that we're facing as well. And Jamie touched on it, like, what happens if somebody tests positive? What do? You have to shut it all down at that point. But how are you going to be testing these players regularly? Are you going to be testing them every couple of days to make sure that they're negative? And how does that look when we don't have tests to go around the country right now? What are we at? Just past 1% of the population that's been tested? What are those optics going to look like when you're saying, oh, look at these privileged athletes getting tested every few days? We don't have enough tests to go around. I mean, Arizona's rolling this thing out, obviously, that you guys just saw, but it's absurd the fraction of people that have been tested thus far. So you can extrapolate from that the numbers, the case numbers that we're reporting across the country are woefully low from what the actual number is. So how do you manage all that as well?
They're not. And this is why I'm looking at what the closest comp that we can make for hockey is what the NBA is trying to do. And they flat out said they're just not going to test asymptomatic players. And there's, I think, two big reasons for that. One, obviously, the optics of having fewer tests. The other ones, if you don't test players, they're less likely to test positive. So that's the other side of that optics coin, too.
I think someone else is espousing that idea as well.
Yeah, like I don't know how they're going. That's the problem. There's such a logistical nightmare. And look, we all make a living covering sports. I mean, we like it. It's our recreational activity. It's our professional activity. But the reality of the situation is we shouldn't be, athletes shouldn't have any higher priority than anybody else when it comes to the line for testing. Now, it's not how the world works. I understand that. There's a reason why all these NBA guys got tested in like 16 seconds when nobody else in the country could. But it's the optics are going to be bad. And the reality is again, nobody is talking about what's going to happen, because you're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players from different parts of the country, different parts of the world, all converging on one spot. Statistically speaking, it's likely that somebody is going to test positive for COVID-19. That's statistically speaking. And then what do you do from there? And does it even need to be your league? What happens if it's another NBA player and they shut down again? Does hockey decide to come back? Does baseball decide to come back? Do they all shut down again like they did last time?
Do you think there's a sentiment that they can sequester these players? Well, I mean, you're still going to have older people around them. You're still going to have at-risk groups, whether you're talking about executives. I don't know what their thinking is, because have you heard anyone say, I guess, definitively in any of the sports that if one person tests positive, yeah, we're going to have to shut it all down again? Or do they think they can manage it in-house because they have these teams sequestered and they're not an at-risk population?
Part of the baseball plan was, even if somebody tests positive, as long as they're not like basically asymptomatic or whatever, as long as they don't see them as a risk, baseball, one of their many plans they've rolled out, they were just going to keep going.
Yeah,
which is easier said than done, because again, we see, I mean, how many times have, I mean, you guys have covered sports for a lot longer than I have. How many times do you see flus go around locker rooms?
Yeah,
in all the whole sports.
That's a great point. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, how many times have we heard, like, oh yeah, you know, the Blue Jackets are coming into this playoff series, but eight of the guys have the flu?
Happens all the time.
And as an athlete, you're taught you got to fight through that. And it's the flu, but get through it, because this is your one chance to win this playoff round or whatever. This is different. This is not just the flu.
But no, but it's not just the flu. But what I'm saying is, if that's what happens with the seasonal flu that we see, again, every season happens every year in all these leagues. So I think last year, like, Dallas Cowboys were dealing with that issue. Same thing is going to happen if guys start to get sick, especially, again, if they're sequestered. They're still in a locker room together. They're still sharing – you know, a workspace and showers and the field and the gyms and all the other stuff. So it's not like one player is going to get it and that's it. Oh, okay. We'll just, that's it. It's at the end of the world. Like, you're going to see it start to spread because, and look, even if, you know, athletes in peak condition in the mid-20s aren't the target demo for the highest level of concern, we are seeing people in their 20s and 30s die. And also,
and there's why, some athletes with health issues like diabetics. Max Domi is diabetic, right?
Yeah. And you don't want to see that. And you don't want to see people get sick, even if it doesn't result in them going to the hospital. You don't want to see people be violently ill. So, I mean, there's just so many things that I don't think these leagues are really, truly thought through yet that are going to be obstacles that they're going to have to deal with, even when they figure out all the scheduling stuff.
Jamie, I don't want to alarm you, but a seemingly large animal walked behind your chair while you were talking.
That is my dog. That's a dog. Her name is Cinnamon.
All right. Well,
she's enjoying everybody being home.
Is she named after Brendan Shinman?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Good. All right. What else do we want to talk about here before we get into listener questions? Do we want to talk about that foresight plan if this is actually going to happen? Just sort of where the top candidates are as far as actually if the NHL goes with a foresight plan here to play out the rest of the season or the playoffs or whatever, where are those sites going to be?
Well, we wrote a story on this recently, and there are a number of league candidates. First of all, there are a number of criteria that have to be looked at to meet the NHL's needs. Of course, the testing is one of those. There has to be the availability of testing. You can't be in a hot spot for COVID-19. But then there has to be suitable hotel space, and per the CABA, those have to be 4- and 5-star hotels within proximity of the arena. You have to have a lot of practice arena and locker room availability. So these are a number of the issues that they're looking at. Of course, you're looking at food sourcing, you're looking at a number of other things as well, but those are the major things that they outlined when they were citing these potential hub sites. And there are a few cities that have risen to the top that the NHL is actually already exploring. Everyone's heard Edmonton for the Coyotes division because they have the practice ring attached. There are a lot of hotels right there, a lot of rinks in the area, but there are a number of other cities that have risen to the top, Columbus, Minneapolis, that have all the things that they need.
We all agree that if you're going to do this, if things do work out and they can do it, straight to the playoffs is the only way to go, correct? That seems to be sort of the feeling among the three of us, I think among most people.
I think that's all that they can do. I mean, we just talked about all the problems with the regular season, but I hope if they, again, we've said this before as well, I hope if they do go to a playoff format, I hope they expand it. Even if you have to shorten the earlier rounds, I'm fine with that, to be honest, but I think that they should try something out of the box.
Like what?
Like 24 teams. I outlined this the last time or a couple of times ago, I think on the last podcast, maybe that when we talked, I think I outlined what something that would work is 24 teams. You have 12 teams in each conference that have a points percentage of 500 or better. So it's a nice even cutoff. And then you've got 7 teams below it. So I think that's one format that could work. Again, though, I as Jamie talked about earlier, you can't have extended rounds for each round of the playoffs if you're letting 24 teams in. You probably need to shorten at least the first 2 rounds, maybe the first 3 rounds, whether it's best 2 of 3 or as you advance 3 of 5. You need to find a way to definitely to squeeze the schedule in a reasonable amount of time still.
And that is the format too. I mean, that would get the Coyotes in, and I believe they'd be playing the Jets in the first round. But yeah, I think if you do that, and that's the option I've liked the most all along. Again, it gets the Coyotes in, but it's more so for like that just clump of teams over in the East with the Islanders and the Hurricanes and the Blue Jackets and everything, and all these teams that are within a point of each other, and some have played 2 or 3 more games than other ones. It probably is the fairest way because it cuts out the regular season and still puts everybody in that was in the playoff race. Craig and I were talking about this a week or two ago. There was this perception, and I had it too, where the Coyotes down the stretch were just sort of falling apart. But Craig did, you know, you look at the research, they were generating a lot of chances. They were actually playing a lot better right before the pause. And it's like, can you just tell the Coyotes, and I'm sure there are other teams like this, you wouldn't have won enough games in the last 12. So even though you were close, we're just going to say you're not in. I don't know that you can do that.
Right. And yeah, and that's true. They were, it felt like puck luck at that point were turning around for them. And then you look at the fact that they had 8 of their final 12 games where they were actually playing well. Yeah. I don't know that you can comfortably say, yeah, you're out of it unless everything's imperfect right now. So maybe you have to go to the traditional format. But again, I think there's an opportunity here for the NHL to grab the fan base or bring in people that aren't fans at this point by doing something a little unusual, a little outside the box that can generate some excitement.
Anything else as far as I'm sort of fascinated by the concept of this impacting next season because, and I know the NHL has said this, they really want to make that a priority that the 2020-2021 season is impacted as minimally as possible. But what can you do to make sure that that's the case? You know, if you're going to play, if you really want to award the Stanley Cup this year, you can't start next season in October. You just can't.
No.
I agree with that. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, I guess the way you least affect one, you instantly, you scrap the All-Star game, All-Star week in that you're probably scrapping some bye weeks or the bye week system that you were using. The problem is in a heavy contact sport, you know, baseball had a little bit easier solution, you know, doing double headers again, you know, 7 inning double headers type of thing is an easy way to compact the schedule. You know, you only can play so many back to backs and reasonably expect these athletes to be healthy. But you eliminate the All-Star game, you eliminate bye weeks, and you kind of and push back the season just a little bit. You're going to have to make some adjustments. They're not going to be able to fix this all in one season, but I'm very curious to see how they do it. But All-Star game, bye weeks, and then maybe push back. You know, maybe even next year you decide, you know what, maybe the first two rounds are best of 5 even. And say we're saving the conference finals and Stanley Cup finals are best of 7. You know, it all is going to depend on when you start. And if you're able to cancel the season, which I don't think any of us want, then you can probably start semi-ish on time, depending on how the world is at that point. But I'm curious to see. It's going to affect more than just, might even affect more than just next season.
They are determined to get an 82-game season, and you understand that from a revenue standpoint. And the other idea behind pushing this all back is that they really don't want to go into next season without fans. So if you have to push it into December, you do that so that you can have the fans in the buildings. But you're still talking about a crazy condensed schedule and then the Olympics rolling around right after it. So it's a really difficult thing to manage. Players already complain about the schedule being too condensed and that leading to injuries. Well, this is certainly going to do that. So another talking point for the NHL and the NHLPA.
Are you guys going to be okay with no All-Star game next year?
Oh, I don't know how. I wonder one last point before we get to listener questions and stuff, but I do wonder if they will have at least expanded rosters for next season. I think adding 2 or 3 players to the roster to allow for more rest days. I know there might be some teams that don't want to rest their stars, and I get that, but at least giving them the opportunity and a few more guys to get at least NHL-level paychecks. But I think that would be the most interesting one for me.
Are you saying this is our chance to collectively try out for the NHL?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Before we get to listener questions, though, Craig, what exactly are the Blackhawks doing?
Well, they got rid of the wrong guy right now, although I can see a need for sweeping changes within that organization. So there are a couple schools of thought here. They're going to replace John McDonough, who was just fired. Surprisingly to some people, not surprisingly to me, because I don't think that relationship with the Wurtzes was very good anyway. There's a thought that they're going to bring in a guy who's just going to take over president of hockey operations duties and replacement on it, but that still leaves the business side. And what I'm hearing is they're probably going to promote from within first to handle the business side, and I don't think it's going to be Danny Wurtz because he's got too much else on his plate with all the other businesses. But after that, once they bring in a business guy, I need someone in that president of hockey operations position overseeing Stan Bowman, and I'm really curious who they're going to look at. I think they want a younger voice in there. I think they want a more progressive voice in there. So when you see guys like Mike Gillis stumping for himself to get the job subtly, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think he's who they're looking at. I do wonder about some other of the candidates out there. Eddie Olczyk clearly is a guy who's been around that organization, but does he have the requisite experience Does he understand analytics? Does he buy into all that to be the guy that they want in that position? I don't know. I don't see a perfect fit, to be honest, on the market right now. So I'm really curious how this is all going to shake out for them.
Maybe they just have Stan Bowman make every decision going forward, because that he seems the one guy that's just invincible there. It's crazy.
I don't know that he is invincible at this point. I think this is a sign that they understand something's wrong here. And I know Scotty has a lot of sway in there, but if you bring a president of hockey operations in for the Blackhawks, Scotty has lost his influence at that point. And that's probably an important step for the Blackhawks to take if they want to move forward. But one of the central question for me is, where do the Blackhawks think they are right now? Do they think they can do what the Penguins did and have another run in them? Can they, you know, support the core players with better depth forwards and still be a cup contender? I don't think they can, because I think they've given too much away. I think it was Eric Tuhacek who pointed out that draft where they moved Nicholas Chalmerson and Artemi Panarin in the same year. That was where they really went wrong. That's where Stan Bowman blew it, because you had two more difference makers on the roster than you have right now. You just don't have enough now. I don't think they can build this thing back up, but I'm not sure if they're willing to admit that it's over at this point.
It does not seem like they're willing to admit that.
No, they don't. And I think the Penguins comparison somewhat makes – I get the comp there, but A, do you believe that Jonathan Toews can be as productive as Evgeny Malkin? No, I don't either. As Craig Shakey said, it's not a video podcast.
Never
no,
has
I
been,
don't think
has
so.
He?
No, and
not from an offensive standpoint.
Where are these?
Well, Malkin's not a top 100 player anyway, so I don't know why you brought him up.
I mean, Toews is a great two way player, right?
Sure,
so you acknowledge the other things that he brings to the table, but yeah, for that money, he's not putting up the points he needs to put up.
But if you want to copy that formula, and look, Kane is still producing at as high a level as you can expect him to produce. He's still an elite talent, but you're not getting Evgeny Malkin and Toews. You also, where are these $967,000 wingers that you stick on the side that score 30 goals that the Penguins seem just to pull out of their behinds every year? And
yeah,
turn into Jake Gensel and turn into Brian Rust and turn into all, like, those guys aren't there. Now, it could have been Panarin, not at that price, but it could have been Panarin at some point. But they don't have all these. I think sometimes people forget about the auxiliary winger, young wingers that have really progressed strongly. Because I know, look, we can laugh at everything they've done on their blue line at both cities, but in this case, Pittsburgh, we can laugh at them for all the things that have happened there. But they've been able to turn over complementary pieces for their two-star centers at a pretty aggressive rate without giving up a lot of capital or cap space.
Yeah. And when you look at the Blackhawks farm system, they've got nothing coming either, by the way. There's nothing. There are no solutions there. So this would have to be done through trades, which, you know, it's fair to say Stan Bowman hasn't managed those that well.
And what do they have aside from draft capital? Like, I mean, what do you, you know, you can't move. I mean, you're handcuffed.
Might not be an option this year, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, you can move Keith on that contract, but
you could move Kane if you're really willing to admit it. You could move Kane, but if you're talking about, do they still think that they're a cup contender? Obviously, yeah. You need to keep Patrick Kane, and no, you're not. You, first of all, you got contracts you can't move, right? Brent Seabrook's contract's not going anywhere. Yeah. Jonathan Tate's contract isn't going anywhere. So you're in a big world of hurt there.
Yeah, the only chance you can move a deal like that is some sort of weirdness with Seattle eventually. Because they'll have the cap space to make it. In theory, they'll have the cap space to make that happen. But
they could be the Seattle Seabrooks. Have they announced their name yet, by the way?
No. Who cares?
Does anyone care? Maybe. I don't know.
All right. Well, Craig, you don't have your giant bell with you, which is disheartening. But let's get into some of these listener questions. And I applaud, I'm sure you guys do as well, the listeners who wrote in. We got a pretty good chunk of questions here. So we'll try and get to as many of them as possible. Thanks, everybody, continuing to listen through all this, and we'll keep doing shows. I just don't know that we're going to do them every week right now, but let's start with Mike. This is such a complicated question. How does the draft memo affect the Hall trade conditions?
Okay, so this is something I'm really interested in seeing. They didn't use this word, but essentially the league arbitration element to determining what these conditional draft picks end up being. I am fascinated by what if these teams can't work out something, which I imagine is going to happen more often than not, especially early on, because nobody wants to set a precedent they're going to get laughed at for. I am fascinated by what the league thinks is a middle ground here, and whether that changes based on where the records are. Like, let's say you don't play a postseason. Is our conditional picks traded by Boston, who's clearly going to make the playoffs, different than conditional draft picks by, let's say, Arizona, who's a bubble team? Do they look at that differently? Are all conditions looked at the same? I'm fascinated by what this potential middle ground would be that the league office would say. You either get it on your own or you take our solution.
Yeah, in short, Mike, we have no idea at this point. And let's add another piece here for Arizona in particular. There are a lot of GMs that are really mad at the Coyotes about the potential fitness testing of draft prospects. What are the potential punishments if there are going to be punishments from the league? Could they come down a little harder in this area to punish the Coyotes if they're trying to mitigate cost for an owner who just took over a troubled franchise and is facing massive losses in all of his other businesses? I don't know. I'm just speculating at this point, but just throwing it out there. Is this another potential way to punish the Coyotes if they're going to punish the Coyotes?
I almost feel like you have to look at it, and if we don't play out the rest of the season, it just needs to be that you met the condition if you were a playoff team, and if you weren't, then you weren't. But the problem with that is, now let me amend that. If you weren't in a playoff spot, then it should be counted as if you weren't in the playoffs. What's tough is to say, okay, Boston made a pick, but they were clearly going to make the playoffs. Well, that's great, but they never actually got to play in the playoffs. So how are you going to punish them for that?
But then you also have the issues of not every condition is just make the playoffs. There are conditions about getting to the conference finals or conditions about percentage of games played or sometimes just a number of games played. So I get why this is complicated, because it's not, even if you said, okay, if you're in playoff position or you playoff position based on points percentage, you're in or you're out, there's still other complicated matters, because winning a championship, winning a playoff round, getting to the conference finals, playoff games, all these things going.
You have to wipe those out. Don't you have to wipe those out? There's no way to say, oh, this team would have won two rounds of the playoffs.
No, but I understand there being that concern there of, because somebody is getting, I mean, somebody's going to get screwed one way or the other here. I mean, I don't think whatever you can do to make the most of it as uniform as possible. It's not going to be across the board, and you can't do anything about playoff rounds, but you're going to have to figure out what you're doing for what the cutoffs for playoffs or not playoffs are. Because my thing is I know everyone's talking about, the Jersey should get the first round pick and all the other stuff. But to me, if they expand the postseason to 24 teams and I'm the 24th team in, I'm not sure that's fair for me to give up my pick as if I made the playoffs, because I guess I did, but that's not the top 16. So I think there's some level of unfairness there as well. If, you know, two-thirds of the league makes the playoffs, then that's also a concern if you use that formula. So I just don't know if there's an easy way to – I guess that's kind of why they're saying figure it out on your own, or we'll figure it out on a case-by-case basis in this potential proposal. But there are a lot of people going to be unhappy.
Yeah, I don't see how you can punish a team. Maybe punish isn't the right word, but treat a team like they made the playoffs. And it's like taxing somebody for a job, but they're not getting paid from that job. It's just like you can't go to a team and say, you have to give this up because you got to be in the playoffs. Well, I didn't get to be in the playoffs. There were no playoffs.
But conversely, New Jersey was trading Taylor Hall on the predicated on their mind of, maybe let's say they had a 70% chance that the Coyotes were going to make the playoffs. And that was enough to push them into making the deal of trading away Taylor Hall for the package they traded him away for. If you were told them, okay, there's no chance the Coyotes make the playoffs, then what would the package be? Or if there's a 20% chance in their mind, then what would the package be? So I understand the argument from the other side saying, yeah, we traded Taylor Hall to a team that was in a playoff position. We expect them to make the playoffs. We were essentially basically banking on a 75% chance of getting a first round pick. So I get where this is where it becomes complicated. It's easy from the Coyotes' perspective to say, well, we didn't get to play in the postseason, so we shouldn't give up one of our picks that we said we had to play in the postseason for. But Jersey's like, we wouldn't have made that trade if we didn't think you had a good chance of making the postseason. And now this, so I don't know. It's just this is going to be a mess. People are going to be very unhappy, and this is going to be a field day for those league conspiracy theorists, I believe.
Well, it goes back though to what you said earlier, in that there's not going to be any perfect solutions. And I just feel like in that specific scenario, if you make the Coyotes pay like they were in the playoffs, you're screwing them over a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. Whereas the other way, you're screwing New Jersey over a 7 on a scale of 1 to 10. And so I don't know if there's a way to meet in the middle, but there's not going to be any perfect solutions, but it's just, and there's not any way like the league could have prepared for this or teams could have prepared for this. This is just something that happened, but it's going to be such a headache. And we've seen in the past, sometimes teams or, you know, the league and players in this league can't necessarily negotiate things out.
Yeah. And there's no solution you could think of that doesn't have a hole in it. But I almost wonder if, let's say you end up canceling the season, do you almost just do a clean draft in 2020 and then everything else involves 2021 record and season and picks. But then even that becomes, you know, you traded, like I said, Jersey traded Taylor Hall expecting Arizona to be better. Taylor Hall may or may not re-sign with Arizona. So now you're doing picks for seasons that weren't expected. So I don't know. It's just, it's a mess.
Here's Murdoch's question. There's three of them. First one's tough. In your opinion, what movie sequel is better than its prequel?
Oh, I got one.
Okay.
Aliens.
I've never seen Aliens. Okay. Or Aliens 2.
That's definitely my...
Terminator 2 is probably better than Terminator 1.
Yeah.
I would pick that one as well. Yeah, I'd throw that right in there.
I know some people like Godfather 2 more than Godfather 1. They're both pretty even, I would say. Yeah, that's about, I don't know. Is the second Harold and Kumar as good as the first Harold and Kumar, Jamie?
I have not seen.
Okay. Most people are brutal.
Tater tots or regular French fries? This is easy. Tots.
No, regular French fries. No. It's very easy to mess up tots.
Yeah.
No. I'm assuming.
Tater tots, really?
Yes. I'm assuming you're talking about good tater tots. Good tots versus good fries.
They're a good change of pace potato. They're not the everyday potato.
That's the name of this episode, change of pace potato. Craig, excluding the Blackhawks, which other NHL team would you like to cover besides the Coyotes?
Vancouver, so I could live in Vancouver. Had nothing to do with the team.
I had a feeling that might be your answer.
You don't want to cover Louis Erickson in perpetuity?
I always wonder why, like when I think about the hate spewing toward the Coyotes from Canada, and granted it's come from a lot of different directions, I think there's an undue amount of hate toward the Coyotes emanating from Vancouver, and I've always wondered why that is.
Yeah, that is weird. But and then I agree with you, but also I kind of think Vancouver just hates everybody.
Yeah, I think that's true too. I think Thomas Trantz, our writer out there, told me they pretty much hate everyone, but I'm an insider. I'm from here, so it kind of accepted me.
Our buddy, Carl.
So provincial.
Carl Putnam writes in, thoughts on how the NWHL used guests and social media to conduct their draft earlier this week? I'd personally love to see the NHL try to do some combo of NWHL and 2020 NFL draft, maybe have hockey current and former players announce the selections along with a few surprises. I thought the NFL draft, all things considered, did a pretty decent job. And I do think you have to get kind of innovative if you're going to be the NHL and you're going to do the draft in late June. You have to find different ways to make this entertaining because you just don't have the typical resources you would normally have.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, although I can't comment on the NFL draft because I didn't watch it.
But I can't because I spent 15 hours a day working on them all 3 days. I thought they did a great job. You have to get creative. You have to, especially with these virtual drafts, you're not going to have the same pageantry and glitz and glamour you had before. Now, even, you know, which is still scaled back for hockey compared to the NBA and the NFL, but... I'm excited to see what they can do and using the virtual things that the NFL did with having going into players' homes and seeing them with their families, all that. I thought that was cool. It was a nice touch. Now, it is also a league that sometimes can't get their NHL award show on the TV in their, you know, newsroom in Vegas. So I'm a little concerned about them operating 30 different Zoom calls at the same time. But if they can do it, that's the way to do it.
Can we just make
local artists maybe sing a little jingle about each draft pick? So if it's someone, you know, if it's Chicago's draft pick, find somebody from Chicago. What do you think?
I like that, but that just opens the door for Nickelback to be singing about one of these teams' draft picks. So yeah, that's can we all make the pact right now that we're going to the award show in 2021 as a podcast? Wouldn't that be great? We've never actually all gone to Vegas.
That's right. All three of us haven't gone at the same time.
To
be determined. I don't know if I can make that.
It's 15 months away.
Well, see, now maybe it'll be cooler if they keep pushing the seasons and parts back. Maybe the NHL awards next year will be like in, you know, October or something.
Halloween awards. Alex writes in, who would you want to be a quarantine buddy with in any pro sports? Jamie's is probably from the Yankees. I've gotten versions of this question. I got yelled at one point on the air here for not picking Alex Morgan. I don't think Alex Morgan is my answer, but I don't know what my answer is, which is funny since I've been asked this question multiple times. So I'll let you guys answer instead.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Does that have to be an active athlete?
No, I would say no.
I think an interesting name, just Nick Swisher. Would be a fun, just a cool, just like quirky.
You would want to punch him in the face after like 3 hours, though.
Probably, but you know, we'll see. But yeah, I think Nick Swisher would be a fun one. That's a name I haven't brought up on the show before.
Thankfully. Craig, do you have one, or do you want me to move on to Dangle Snipe Belly's questions?
I think we'll move on.
Is there a better pasta sauce than bolognese?
I think there are a lot of pasta sauces better than bolognese. I like it, but I think they're a lot better than that, actually, including the marinara that I just made this week, which was fantastic.
Nice humble brag there.
Yeah.
Hearing Luke give news updates makes me wonder about his normal voice. Is it normally podcast levels of upbeat or COVID update introducing Jamie levels of sorrow or somewhere in between? That's a good question. I have my answer, but it's probably better if you guys answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much there's the there's a subtle difference between your podcast voice and like your Coyotes pre and post game show voice. Like your pre and post game show, it's very formal, it's very professional, and then on this show is more of the, you seem more excited. You know, you seem more like, yeah, I get to talk about the Penguins type of excitement, where it's like, oh, it's, I get to talk about but yeah, there is a subtle difference I've noticed, but you can kind of tell when Luke gets really excited about things, particularly on this radio broadcast. He goes from the like straight newsman, you start to see he gets a little bit into podcast mode.
I just like that his version at one end of the spectrum was introducing Jamie levels of sorrow. Hopefully I'm not consistently there. Although we definitely hit it in the first 5 seconds.
The Coyotes lost their fifth game in a row, and I'm joined by Jamie Eisner here.
Where do I sit in all this, by the way?
I just know I was at that level in the 2014-15 season a lot.
I had that effect on people.
Best Tom Cruise movie that isn't Top Gun. I like the Mission Impossibles. I have no problem admitting that. They're not like my favorite movies of all time, and I actually haven't seen all of them, but the newer ones are pretty good.
I have a few thoughts on this, actually. I'm a big Collateral fan, first of all. I think that's a great movie with Jamie Foxx. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. I'm a big Michael Mann film fan as well. But he has a few. Have you guys seen Edge of Tomorrow?
No,
I've not.
You're not movie guys, are you?
No, I'm really not. Like, I'm looking through some of it. It's like, eh.
Risky Business, I'm sure, is one that a lot of people would say. Minority Report's another good movie.
Yeah, I never saw that one either.
Those would be my...
That one looked good. I'm not a big sci-fi guy, but Minority Report, I mean, it's been out forever, and I've heard a lot of good things. I just haven't... Who knows? I'm running out of things to watch. I watched a special on the Detroit Red Wings this morning, so maybe we're not that far from Minority Report. Booper, if you all weren't writers, reporters, what career would you be in? Was this career always the goal, or did it just happen?
I think I would be a teacher. That was what I kind of thought I was going to be. I don't know what level, but I used to, as a kid, I would come home and teach a fake class based on whatever I learned in school that day. So I think that's the path I was going to go. I don't know when it kind of fully switched over. I think it's once my athletic career ended in high school, because I kind of sucked, that I decided like I wanted to stick around sports in some capacity and try to figure out how I could do that. And that's how this career came about.
What subject would you have taught? Because I don't think sarcasm mixed with disdain is an actual subject.
I always thought I would teach either math or social studies.
Okay. Are you good at those?
Yeah, I was always an A student in those categories. So I always thought that's what I would teach. Probably either middle school or high school level.
That's a really good answer, and probably not one I expected from Jamie. But can you imagine Jamie as your teacher? Like, you walk into class and
going back to the previous question, I'm wondering how you would manage these levels of sorrow that we were just talking about. Would you convey those to your students? Would you bring everyone down with you, Jamie?
Probably. Give them a better idea of how the real world works real quick.
What would you do if like somebody walked in, if one of your students walked in wearing like a Colorado Avalanche jersey? Would you just give them an F on the spot or what?
Yeah, I would say, well, we're going to have like six of us going to go have a pizza party, and you're going to be maybe the sixth person we invite.
Craig, what would you have done? I feel like you were always on this path.
No, I actually had a job in finance right out of college that I bailed on because I got cold feet.
I was really hoping you were going to say you actually had a job at Cirque du Soleil before this. You know about.
Yes, you should have seen my tights.
Oh, boy.
No, I was actually going to go work for Goldman Sachs in New York. I had an apartment picked out with three friends.
Oh, wow.
And I never worked a day.
Craig would have so much more money right now if he had done that.
So, I would have been so horrible at the job, though. Just so horrible. No interest in it whatsoever.
I don't know. I would have gone and like tried to be an actor or something. Like I can't sit in an office.
You need the attention. I know.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. I tell you though, if I had to do one of your two hypothetical jobs, I would have gone more towards teacher than I wouldn't be able to sit in an investment firm. There's no way. But that's a good question from Booper, who always chimes in with good questions. Okay, Coach East Jack, as a fan, where's your favorite spot to sit in the arena for a hockey game?
So that's interesting because this has changed throughout my sports fandom life. I would say prior to covering the team, I always, you know, everybody always loves, let's say hockey, for example, and we'll go a couple different sports, but because Craig ran away to go get his cord, he doesn't know we're telling everybody about this. What's the typical like 10 to 15 rows up on the, you know, center ice type of thing.
Yeah.
But to me, I kind of like being over the goalie. I like kind of being on that second, like sweet concourse level, over one of the goals. I like the almost video game view, of it. I also really enjoyed the press box view. I liked the fact that I could just kind of like almost zone out and see the entire ice and all the things that are happening because I like to see plays manifest and I like to see things, try to anticipate what's going on.
Zone out a lot. Yeah.
So that's for hockey. For some of the other sports like baseball, I think there's nothing like being behind the catcher. I think that's always the place you want to be able to legitimately see balls and strikes and kind of that perspective, almost like the batter's perspective. So, those would be my two. And football is the clear, you know, 50-yard line, you know, 20 rows up type of thing.
I think,
you go, Luke.
I would say for hockey, and Jamie alluded to it, you know, at practice, we always sit about, 15 rows up at center ice, typically behind the penalty box side, just because you get a better, that's your best view of the ice. But to your point, Jamie, of liking to sit behind the goal or maybe even a little bit up behind the goal. I like that more for power plays than anything because you can watch the power play develop and you can, I don't know. It, like you said, it's like a video game view. I used to do that when I was playing video games. If I was on the power play, I would switch the view to that angle. So, you know, in a lot of the arenas now, there's not really a bad seat. This is not like the old, when the Coyotes played downtown. And if you sat in a certain area, you couldn't even see a third of the ice. I mean, for the most part now, there's no obstructive viewing, so there's not a bad seat. But I still, if you're telling me I had season tickets and I have to sit in one seat all year, I'm still going with the traditional, not right on the glass, probably about 10 rows up where you can see the whole ice and still be close.
I would go a little higher than that. I do like to see everything develop, and that's probably just because I've been doing this for so long that I think I see the game that way now. The press boxes at MSG and at Nassau Coliseum are actually the perfect height. They're not too high like the nosebleeds that we get in most arenas now. So they offer a really good view of the entire ice, but you're close enough that you can actually appreciate it. As far as the other sports, I'm not a live football guy at all. Actually, I don't think there's a good seat in the entire stadium. It's just too big a field to watch. But for the NBA, man, I'll be courtside any day. I think that's the best place to be for the NBA and for baseball, because I grew up in Chicago. I want to be in the bleachers.
Your bleacher guy? Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't really sat behind home plate a ton. I'm not as bougie as Jamie, but yeah, that seems like that would be,
Not always on the first level, but it's I don't. It's a good. It's a nice. Again, I think it's more about. I think it's what you watch the game for. I like to watch sports and anticipate, and I think for me, it's finding the best spots in the arena to do that, and that's being able to see the whole field or seeing the key action happening at the same time. So that's why I kind of default to those areas.
For me with baseball, I'm really not even paying attention to the game. So I want more of the experience, the ambiance. That's why I'm in the bleachers.
I'm going to skip. So there's a lot of draft questions. So we appreciate you guys sending in the questions, but I feel like we addressed a lot of the drafts already. So although Adam Banks, and he has a picture of Adam Banks from the Mighty Ducks movie.
Adam Banks has some good questions. We have to ask these.
He threw in one of them. Thoughts for a new draft lottery. Just the bottom four teams are the only ones eligible. Worst record gets 35%, second worst 30%, third 20, fourth 15. Everyone else is 5 through 32 based on record.
I mean, I'm fine with that. It's finding the balance between not allowing outright tanking and also not allowing teams that miss the playoffs by 1 point to pick top three.
Right.
Like I just, it shouldn't even be an option. It shouldn't even be a 1% option because we're seeing all these small percentages. It doesn't really even matter right now. But to me, I think that would be perfectly fine. Let the bottom teams hammer it out, and then anybody else can just slot where they need to.
We got to read Chris's question. We have to read this. Have you guys seen this one from Chris Blythe?
No.
Hopefully I got his name right. One of those. No question. Just want to say how appreciative I am of your podcast. UK born and bred Coyotes fan. So your pod is invaluable and keeps me company on my morning runs along the English coast. Wow. For the record, hot dogs should have equal mustard to ketchup ratio. Cheers, chaps.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with Chris having ketchup on his hot dog. You guys know my stance on that. I believe Craig's in the corner, but he's listening from England, so he can do whatever he wants.
I very much appreciate him listening and being a big fan, but I don't take food advice from the Brits.
Yeah, well, with that.
Oh, Jamie's the worst. I hope you know that across the globe.
That's a fair point, though, Jamie. I think I'm on board with that, actually. I'm on board with that opinion. However, I will allow ketchup across the pond. Don't bring that to North America with you, but you can eat ketchup on your hot dogs across the pond.
Chris, I've done this numerous times over the last, I don't know, 7 years I've known Jamie. I'd just like to apologize on behalf of Jamie and just know that all Americans are not like Jamie Eisner. Please continue to listen and write in. Todd.
Well, absolutely. A lot of things I like about England, just food choices are not one I'm going to listen to.
They've got some fish and chips. That's good. They've got some food. That's some good food.
That's nice. They got one.
Todd in Phoenix. What's the best Mark Wahlberg movie? Hold your nose and pick one. This is easy. The Departed. He's not in it a lot, but that's an all-time classic.
Okay. Well, what about Ted?
Ted is probably number two.
Yeah, Ted is a good one.
What's the worst movie I've ever seen that I walked out on? It's the only movie I've ever walked out on. Had Mark Wahlberg in it, and I can't remember the name of the movie now. It had The Rock in it, I think, even for a little bit.
Oh, no.
You have to get that doesn't narrow it down anymore.
It was about some like gym owner in the 90s. I can't believe I can't think of the name. It's the worst movie I've ever seen. And I walked out. But The Departed is great. And Ted is good. You guys prefer Ted 1 or Ted 2?
1.
Okay.
I might also go with, if we're talking about worst Mark Wahlberg movies, you can go with the Daddy's Home sequels.
Well, you just admitted that you've watched those. Brutal. So just so you know.
You don't have kids, so.
Pain or Gain, that was the movie, and it was horrendous. I advise you do not go watch it. Except Jamie, you should go watch that movie. It's good, and it's worth your time. Greg writes in, oh no. Well, I already said his name. I'll just say Rose responded to his question with, oh boy. Greg, this is Greg who gave us our bingo card a couple years ago. So Greg gets his question read. I'm sorry, Craig, in advance. Not sure if this was covered before I started listening in 2017, but what's the story with John Scott? I've heard a few jokes about his All-Star appearance and how the Coyotes weren't happy about it and maybe some players. Any more to it or a question mark? Craig,
well, there's a play out on this one.
There's plenty more to it. There were a number of Coyotes who felt that he should have passed on that and given it to someone who actually deserved to be in the All-Star game instead of this gimmick that was driven by certain media members out there. Beyond that, there's this narrative that John Scott is this great guy and great teammate. Not sure that was the opinion here. In fact, I'm actually sure it was not the opinion here. And let's leave it at that. Sometimes images get marketed they get crafted in a certain way, and they're not necessarily true.
How's that movie coming along?
Yeah, how is that movie coming along?
Greg, I apologize that Jamie deleted all of our episodes like 0 through 100 because you could have gone back and listened to the John Scott Chronicles. At one point, I believe Greg just threw up his arms and walked out of the studio. Another one from Adam Banks. Who is your all-time Coyotes lineup? And will the Coyotes draft pick number be higher or lower than the number of Jamie's wives?
Ooh, I like the second one. That's a really tough question, actually.
I would think it'll
be higher. Huh. No, because they're not going to have that first-round pick, I don't think.
Well, how many wives do you have right now first? I need that variable.
Well, if they don't have first-round pick, that means I have fewer than 31 wives.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I think this is a pretty easy question. So this determines whether or not you think they have to give up that first-round pick or not.
But do we know this definitively?
Well, how many wives will you have by the end of June?
Well, luckily, this is slowing down the process of the nuptials. So I can't go visit any of them.
Why do you keep agreeing?
You know, sometimes it's just crippling loneliness. Other times it's just the need to feel wanted. Usually it's usually for the money.
I'm so glad that we're wasting precious bandwidth with everything that's going on answering these questions. It's amazing. All-time Coyotes lineup. Craig has done a story on this.
I have actually, but so I should ask you guys, but I think we obviously had Shane Doan on that, Keith Tkachuk, Jeremy Roenick, I think Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Keith Yandel, and the goalie is a really tough one.
Yeah.
You could go a number of ways here. You really could. You could pick Hobby Bullen. You could pick Sean Burke. You could pick Mike Smith. What do you guys think?
Hobby Bullen was my first instinctual reaction, but it's tough because there is an era difference. Like I saw somebody talking on Twitter about how Grant Fuhr wasn't very good because of his save percentage yesterday. You can use save percentage of anything more than 7 years ago to determine the worth of a goalie. I would go Hobby Bullen, but it is interesting because I think that's really the only one that I think you have to think extremely hard about to get to the answer.
I think that the two that jump out to me are Sean Burke, because not only was he a decent goalie, but then what he did for future Coyotes goalies as the goalie coach for a little bit in there. But I don't know how you could go for a team that doesn't have much of a playoff history. I don't know how you can't pick Mike Smith because – I mean, they're showing the replays of some of these games right now at Fox Sports Arizona. And that
somebody's writing about them, too.
Oh, well, good. We should find that guy and get him on the show. the job Mike Smith did in the Coyotes' biggest year, I think that's got to be my answer.
Watch game 6 against Chicago. It's just
unbelievable. Ridiculous. And game 4 in the second round against Nashville. I mean, that's a 1-0 game that gets how they held on to for at that point. It was like 50 minutes of holding on to that.
The real Pletch writes in, I'll just say he's angry about the NHL's idea of having the draft before the end of the regular season and or playoffs. We've discussed it, but he's angry. So, and I know he writes into the show a lot. I just want to make sure that his comments got out there. Joseph writes in, should I paint the beams in my ceiling gray or keep it this ugly brown? I don't know if you guys can see it, so you're just going to have to answer sight unseen.
Well, I have seen it. And Joseph, here's what I would say. No, I'm not a fan of gray wall paint anywhere. But I think there are some warmer tones in your floor, looking at your floor, which looks to have some gray and maybe some brown tones in it. So you might want to pick something a little warmer from that to paint your beams.
Warmer tones. Wow. Yes. That's the name. Isn't that the name of the album you collaborated with the other Craig Morgan on? Got a few football helmets in this picture too, Joseph. I can't tell what they are though. So yeah, I agree with Craig cause I don't understand what he said. Hold on. I'm getting rid of the picture. Sarah writes in, should I get back into the writing game when this is over? I would say this. While this is going on, if you like to write, you may as well be writing now because there's plenty of time to write.
Yeah, I think it's a good outlet anyway. I like writing.
Eric, who are the top 5 captains in the league based off skill, leadership, and representative of their franchise?
Ooh, this is a really good question.
Yeah.
We're about to get cut off in less than a minute here from this call. I don't know if we're going to be able to answer
that'll be our in-depth question. Can we pretend to answer next time? And you're right. Zoom's going to cut us off here. So we're going to have to answer some of these questions next time. We'll do another show here within the next week or two. Is that fair, guys?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually do want to answer this question next time. So I'm going to paste this into our show notes for next time. I'll give you a sampling. Sidney Crosby is one of my answers.
Shocking.
All right. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to everybody out there listening. Stay safe, stay smart out there, and rate and review if you want. But this was these episodes. Be gentle with the ratings because we're all over the city. Craig, any final thoughts? You have about 9 seconds.
I got nothing, but I'm sure Jamie does.
Maddie Hattie. I can't believe they haven't cut us off yet.
We actually, you still have a minute.
Do we all still right. have a full minute?
Oh, I think you do, so please stop doing that. All right, for Craig Morgan and Jamie Eisner, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.
Stay inside.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.